You're listening to the best of the day.
I say you the best.
Halford and Bruff. You're listening to Halford and Bruff.
Vrana drops to Braden Shen. Front for Vrana, he scores!
You know, obviously, D-zone coverage early on wasn't good, but, Quinn Hughes was a monster.
You're a monster!
You know, some of these guys think they're giving us everything in their tank, they're dreaming.
Good morning, Vancouver, 601 on a Wednesday. Happy Wednesday, everybody. It is Halford, it is Bruff, it is Sportsnet 650. We are coming to you live from the beautiful Kintech Studios in beautiful Fairview Slopes in Vancouver. Jason, good morning.
Good morning.
Ada, good morning to you.
Good morning.
And Laddie, good morning to you as well.
Hello, hello.
Where did You're a Monster come from?
You're a monster.
That is a Shrek reference, my friend.
Okay. You're a monster.
You like that one, eh?
I don't know if I've just got the giggles this morning because I had a late hockey game and I'm working on about 3 hours of sleep. I'm like Apu in the convenience store buzzing around like a hummingbird.
He's actually turned into a human. All right, focus, everybody. We got a huge show ahead of us. We will probably talk about the Toronto Maple Leafs, but late last night, the Winnipeg Jets became the main character in Canada with I watched the third period of just a terrible loss in San Jose to the Sharks. So you wake up this morning and all of a sudden, that playoff chase that we were bemoaning yesterday because it was kind of getting lame, it got good in the West.
Because everything went against the Jets.
Yes.
They lose to the Sharks, the Flames won, and the Predators beat the Bruins.
Just hanging around the Predators. It's an amazing story. They sold everything at the deadline, and now they're 3 points out of a playoff spot. So we'll talk to David Amber about all that at 6:30, 7:30. Alexander Gonge-Ruzic. I did it. I pronounced it properly.
That was impressive.
Yeah. He's going to join us. He works for Between the Sticks, Northern Football. He's one of the better young up-and-coming soccer journalists in the country. And we're bringing him on because Canada beat Honduras quite emphatically yesterday, 4-1 in Toronto. And that booked their ticket to the CONCACAF Champions League finals. It's the semifinal and final. In Vegas in June, which I think I'm going to go down for. Think I'm going to head down for
it. I was actually thinking of asking you, like, should we go to Vegas in June?
You want to go to Vegas?
Really like Vegas when it's super hot down there, too.
Yeah, like, I'm assuming it's not exactly a tourist hotspot from Canadians going in June.
No, but it's still pretty busy. Like, yeah. I love the pool when it's, like, 100 degrees.
Yeah, I mean, I would love to go. I think it would be great.
Allegiant's got air conditioning, though, right? I mean, it does, right?
I hope so.
Yeah, okay. Thanks for inviting us, guys. We appreciate that.
Well, we're going to do that afterwards.
Have a nice trip together.
I wasn't going to invite them.
Yeah.
Really?
Laddie, the whole time, would be like, I don't even like soccer.
Dogs fly for free. You guys can come with us. Anyway, Alexandra Gonge-Ruzic is going to join us at 7:30 to talk about the latest triumph for Canada soccer. It's weird. It's still weird to me a little bit that Canada goes into these matches as a heavy favorite and then does the business rather easily.
Can I just say one thing that I enjoyed from that match?
What's that?
Was the fact that we learned that Canada now has a designated penalty taker.
Yeah, that's... I was not happy when that happened. So, for the, you know what? Who cares? It's early in the morning. I'll just explain real quick. Kyle Larin scored twice in the first 10 minutes against Honduras yesterday. Mm-hmm. He's been on fire. He's been terrific. So... then Canada got a penalty late in the first half, and Kyle Larin took it and missed. Now, this is a big deal because in the World Cup, you'll remember, Canada also missed a penalty of significance because Alphonso Davies took it.
And John Herdman afterwards was basically saying, like, well, I'll let the fellows on the field sort out who's going to take the PK. And everyone in Canada was like, that feels like a coach's responsibility.
Yeah. And then he took responsibility for it. He named Jonathan David the penalty taker, but Jonathan David gave the penalty to Kyle Larin yesterday, so now he's screwing it up. Whole thing's a mess. Anyway, we'll talk about that at 7:30. I won't bog down too much soccer talk early in the show. Let's tell everybody what happened.
Hey, did you guys see the game last night?
No. Oh, what happened?
I missed all the action because I was...
We know how busy your life can be.
What happened?
Missed it?
You missed that?
What happened?
What Happened is brought to you by the BC Construction Safety Alliance, making safety simpler by giving construction companies the best in tools, resources, and safety training. Visit them on the internet at bccsa.ca. Canucks lose. I haven't said that in a while, but the Canucks lose, although it was in overtime, to the St. Louis Blues in the feisty battle for 23rd overall in the National Hockey League standings at the Enterprise Center on Tuesday night.
Yeah, after Quinn Hughes opened the scoring 6 minutes into the first, and remember that name, Quinn Hughes, a Guillaume Brisebois turnover led to the first of what was really an onslaught of Blues goals in an eventual 5-2 lead for St. Louis. It was a sloppy performance, or at least the start to the game. The first two periods, the Canucks were sloppy. More reminiscent, I'd say, of their games under Bruce Boudreau than what we've seen for the most part with Rick Tocchet behind the bench. Now, Rick Tocchet has been behind the bench for a few games where the Canucks went back to their old ways of bad passes, failing to get the puck out, just overall silliness.
Yeah, silliness.
But remember, no lead is safe in the NHL, especially when the Canucks are involved, both when the Canucks have the lead and when they're in a multi-goal deficit, as they were last night. The Canucks had some really nice goals to tie this thing up. That fourth goal, where Petey and Kuzmenko worked the give and go,
it was very nice.
I think it was one of the nicest goals that we've seen this season. Do we have the audio on that call? I want to hear how Batch called it. How did Batch?
Or
how did Batch? Do we have Batch or Shorties? Yeah, we have.
I'd like to hear both. Like, but we'll take one.
Okay, Laddie, just that. Okay, so this is the Canucks are down 5-3 at this point, and two of the Canucks' best players this season hook up for yet another goal.
Into the near corner for Myers, back to Kuzmenko, middle of the ice for Pettersson, left circle in front, Kuzmenko scores! Wide open, what a pass from Pettersson to get it to him in the middle of the ice, and Andre Kuzmenko scores his second of the game to pull the Canucks to within one. It's 5-4.
It's better when those are scored at home, but yeah.
So a bunch of guys had multi-point games last night. Quinn Hughes, JT Miller, Elias Pettersson, Andre Kuzmenko, and Brock Besser, although he wasn't perfect last night, he does continue to pile up the points. The much maligned Brock Besser is now up to 52 points on the season.
I know we've talked about
this. He's not far away from being a point-a-game guy.
I know we've talked
about this. Didn't this happen last year, too? Yes. Everyone was like, he was playing okay, and then he gets like this pretty crazy point total for a guy that was just playing
well,
okay.
Defensively, you can still say he has
issues.
Issues sometimes, yeah. Right? But I think it's one of those things, and you know, the guys were talking about it a lot yesterday on the station. If him and Garland, and maybe we'll throw Beauvilly in there too, because remember, the Canucks have to clear cap space. This is not us saying, like, we want to trade these guys. They need to move money somehow.
Yeah.
So the more points these guys pile up, the better it is in terms of their market value, the less likely chance it is that the Canucks have to retain salary. And if they do have to retain salary, they might actually get something worthwhile in return. Like, it's good. I mean, now, if you're acquiring Brock Besser and you want a detailed scouting report that goes beyond the point production, then you might have some like, okay, I don't know about this. Like, because defensively his underlying numbers they must be improving because they were so bad to start the season, but he's still like a minus 17 or something along those lines. And I'm talking about the nerd numbers.
Yeah.
They were not good early in the season. And if you're a scout, you watch him play, you're like, that guy's not a speedster. But the bottom line for him, the production has been very, very impressive.
Okay, I just want to jump in and say this, though. When we talk about, and we've talked about this a lot this year, with how many good quality individual scoring campaigns the Canucks are going to have in this kind of lost season, right? Like Petey, and we'll get into Petey later because it's bordering on a historic season. It'll be one of the better scoring seasons in franchise history when Pettersson's done this year. And then Hughes, and a lot of people are texting in about Hughes as well, about how great he's been. Besser's got 52 in, I think it's 66 games. So not quite a point-a-game player, but pretty good production. You always have to understand, though, that within the context of the NHL, it's not like a remarkable scoring season. Like, scoring's up everywhere. That doesn't even put Besser in the top 100 in scoring in the league. Like, other guys that are scoring around Brock Besser's clip this year are like Max Domi and Rickard Rakell.
And Jonathan Huberdeau.
Right. Well, yeah. Like, Besser's contract looks amazing compared to Huberdeau's. But, like, again, like, you could have had Max Domi for a song this offseason. Mm-hmm. I think he signed for $2.5-3 million or something. Same thing with Raquel. Like, they're good players, but they're not, they're secondary scoring wingers,
but
right?
I think the point is as he is continuing to put up points, he's more tradable than he was
like,
a little while ago.
And give him his flowers. I don't really like saying that, but give him his flowers because he's had a really tough last couple of years. And for as maligned as he's been, and constantly his name has been in trade rumors this year, he's just kind of gone out mm-hmm. and gotten better under Tocchet and done a nice job racking up points. Like, hey, you know what? Say what you will about the landscape and the context in which he's scoring, he's still scoring them. Like, someone else could be doing it, but Besser's the one out there producing. So good on him for doing it. But really, I mean, if you're going to talk about individual scoring campaigns, I'm assuming this is where we want to go next. It's Hughes and Pettersson in this time where you're kind of playing out the string and you're not really sure what these games are worth or how it's going to translate to next season. At the very least, you can say, man, Pettersson and Hughes are really responding well to that call to be leaders of this team, to be the 1A and 1B guys. And when you didn't know if there was going to be that real quick next step and next evolution in their games, there certainly seems to be.
Well, Tavi texts in, we need to start talking more about Quinn Hughes. I feel like we're talking about him a lot. At age 23, he's on pace for 82 points in 78 games. I personally think Hughes has a higher ceiling than Petey. And that's saying a lot. Tavi, why do you have to, you know, pit them against each other?
Yeah.
They're teammates.
They could both have equally high ceilings.
It's not a competition.
It's not a competition.
It is now. This is sports talk radio.
I guess it's professional sports, though, so maybe it is.
I suppose the NHL is. You know what? It just occurred to me. The NHL is a competition.
Yeah. Yes. It's like almost they
do have to compete,
They are, quote-unquote, competing for a Stanley Cup.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Okay.
Pettersson. I was just blown away by the pass that he gave Kuzmenko. Mm-hmm. Those guys really have chemistry together, and part of it is they're just two really good players, and those two really good players seem to play well together. Yeah. But that was a really, really nice give and go. And what's Kuzmenko up to now? 37, 38 goals, something along those lines?
Andre Kuzmenko has 37 goals and 68 points in 73 games.
And then if you look at historically on the Vancouver Canucks, great individual seasons in terms of points. Elias Pettersson's now well into the top 10, and he's got a bunch of games left. So he's ninth overall in terms of scoring seasons for the Canucks.
Yeah.
He is 2 points behind Todd Bertuzzi, for example, of that terrific season Bertuzzi had in 2002-03, where he had 47 goals and 97 points. Now, before you text in and say, like, all these errors were different, like, yeah, I know.
That's not really the point, though.
But what we're saying is, like, Petey could, by the end of this season, have a top five in Canucks scoring history season. Now, the high water mark, and I don't think he's going to catch this, was Henrik Sedin in 2009-10 when he had 112 points.
That was the year he had 83 assists in 82 games. That was awesome. He had an assist. Yeah. He averaged an assist a game.
That's when the Sedins were really right at the peak of their game. The following year, Daniel Sedin won the Art Ross Trophy. Yep. There was a Hart Trophy in there at some point. Now, Pavel Bure had a couple of seasons that were pretty good for the Vancouver Canucks. He had 60 goals and 50 assists in 92-93 for 110 points. Alex McGillney had 107 points. Marcus Naslin had 104 points. So there have been some guys that have reached that magical 100-point mark. JT Miller nearly did it last season when he had 99 points. I think Elias Pettersson, if he keeps going the way he does or the way he has been, he could maybe reach 105 points, maybe.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I mean, this is just estimated. Who knows? Which would put him above Marcus Naslin's high water mark of 104 points and then put him into the top five of scoring seasons for the Canucks. So what he's doing, granted, scoring is up, but I remember when I was first a very young Canucks fan, naive to the world, thought the Canucks would win the Stanley Cup. Patrick Sundstrom had 91 points, and Tony Tanti had 45 goals, and those were the career best marks. And it was always a little bit embarrassing because the Canucks were one of the few teams in the NHL that had never had a 100-point guy. They'd never had a 50-goal guy. Mm-hmm. And you'd say things like, God, even the Winnipeg Jets have Howerchuk.
Yep.
Right? You know, this was when Gretzky was putting up over 200 points a season, and the Canucks were like, well, Sundstrom had a good season. He had 91, right?
I do remember. I mean, he's younger than you significantly. But I do remember. I remember that's why Bure was so fundamentally
and
important.
And then when Bure arrived, it all went out the window. Fun fact.
Yeah.
The New Jersey Devils were the team with the Canucks that had never had the 50-goal scorer and the 100-point guy. Hmm. They still haven't.
Yeah, that's right.
The New Jersey,
their guy is too.
Their New Jersey Devils have never had a 50-goal guy. Who's their leading scorer in that?
In a single season?
Yeah.
Brian Gionta
had like 48. And Patrick Elias nearly had 100 points. He had like 96 points or something along those lines.
I thought Sakura went off a couple of years, but the most he ever had was 35 with New Jersey.
Isn't that crazy, though?
Yeah.
Brian Gionta
never had it.
Brian Gionta scored 48. We're talking about Brian Gionta, by the way, on the Halford and Brough show. He scored 48 in that first year out of the lockout. And I want to say that he scored like 30 power play goals. You remember that first year out of the lockout where everyone feasted with the man advantage because there was like 12 power plays a game? Gionta scored half his goals on the man advantage. And you're like, wait a minute, what kind of world are we living in where Gionta's scoring nearly 50?
But
anyway,
so
Jack Hughes probably going to get there, you'd think.
Hopefully.
He'll
yeah.
be the guy
for their sake.
Yeah.
So what the Canucks have right now in Elias Pettersson and Quinn Hughes is, frankly, one of the best centers in the league and one of the best defensemen in the league. So when, you know, this is why the debate about whether or not the Canucks should rebuild or not is so spicy, because there are some people on the rebuild side mm-hmm. that are like, yeah, but they're still not in the playoffs. Like, and they've still got all these, you know, they got these bad contracts. They're going to have to get rid of. It's just really hard to improve this team.
Yep.
Right?
Yeah.
So, well, and then you're like, yeah, it is going to be challenging to improve the team. But then the people on the other side of the debate, they're like, yeah, but they've got Petey. They've got Hughes. They've got Demko. And these guys, they're not like 32 either. They're young players. Mm-hmm. What are you talking about rebuilding? You build around these guys. Like, you don't want to take a step back. You just want to keep trying to improve the team. And if that means trading away first-round draft picks to go get a legit top-four defenseman like Filip Hronek, you go do it. The test of all this will be, well, it's a big test, but the first big test is going to be next season. Like, how's it all going to look, right? Mm-hmm. Right? Because the worst thing you can do if you're a general manager is have these great players, like elite players. They're elite players, right? They're up there with the best in the league and waste them.
Yeah. Pettersson's seventh in NHL scoring right now. So to distill everything Jason said earlier, if you've been a Canucks fan from day one or you've been a Canucks fan your entire life, Pettersson this year is putting together one of the five best offensive campaigns in franchise history.
Or he could, in theory.
He probably will.
Yeah.
So that's where you've got to understand. And that of those five seasons, only four guys have done them because two of them were from Pavel Bure. So right now you're looking at the season Petey is having is going to go down in the pantheon, the Mount Rushmore of Canucks lore alongside Sedin, Bure, McGillney. And then there's Pettersson. So he's entered that class. He's got more points than Nathan MacKinnon, Mitch Marner, Jason Robertson, Tage Thompson. Like, it's an elite level year, right? And yeah, you can both sides the thing and you can play devil's advocate. And you can say, yeah, well, it's coming on a team that it's coming on a team where they're not very good and they're out of the playoff chase. I mean, in the same token, in the same breath, I was watching the Sharks game last night against the Jets. And by the way, the Jets are a disaster. Erik Karlsson's probably going to win the Norris on one of the worst teams, maybe the worst team in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
So some of it is like, yeah, the context and the environment in which you're doing it. But the other part of it is like, understand that this is a very, very elite level offensive campaign. And Pettersson's forced himself into that conversation where you're saying, He's a top 10 scorer in the NHL. He's one of the top centers in the NHL. And so it goes back to what you're saying. That debate between do you tear it back to the studs? Do you build around this? The frustrating part, and I think maybe this is the thing we should focus on, are the fans that are saying there are the pieces there, but the work done around the edges has been so poor. Filling out this roster, getting the right coaching staff involved, making sure that there are young guys coming up on their ELCs, not having anchor contracts, and most importantly, not having a good blue line to insulate around Hughes and a good blue line to prop up the rest of this team and to help out Demko. That's where people get frustrated.
Yeah, we got a bunch of texts in. You know, I was talking about the New Jersey Devils and how they've never had a 50-goal guy and a 100-point guy. Text in, the Devils have won the Stanley Cup. Yeah, it doesn't.
Three times.
No, they won it during an era where scoring was down. But it's a good point to make because the Canucks have had a ton of great individual scoring performances this season. You run down the list. Quinn Hughes, great. Elias Pettersson, awesome. Andre Kuzmenko, terrific. JT Miller's going to have another good scoring season. There are guys that are putting up points, but there's more to hockey than putting up points. The reason the Canucks are going to miss the playoffs is because they were terrible defensively early in the season, and as we saw last night, they still ain't perfect. And oftentimes their goaltending hasn't been very good this season. Early on for Thatcher Demko, and then when Thatcher Demko got hurt, all the other guys that they tried didn't get the job done. So there are still improvements to be made. It's a fascinating situation the Canucks are in. It really is. Because you go back to this debate where on the one side you have these people that are like, yeah, but they've got Pettersson and Hughes and Demko. Like, you want to rebuild? But the rebuilders are like, yeah, look at where they are in the standings. They're a bad hockey team still. And it's going to be very challenging to get better. And that last part is the key. And that's going to be the challenge on management because they've chosen a route. They've chosen the route to get better around Quinn Hughes and Elias Pettersson and Thatcher Demko and Kuzmenko. And they've said, we don't want to take a step back. Some of you are wanting to take a step back. We've got these great young players. How are we going to take a step back? So the rest of us are kind of like, all right, well, go improve the team and we'll see you next season. And by the way, those first 10 games, you better not screw them up.
Speaking of teams in an interesting position, the Winnipeg Jets last night. The only other thing I want to get to in what happened, because the Jets are in such a bad way right now that I am looking at this and, you know, we do the Schadenfreude thing here. It's like, well, if we can't have anything nice, let's bask in someone else's failures. The Winnipeg Jets lost 3-0 in San Jose. I was watching the broadcast, and I think they mentioned, I don't know, at least 10 times about how the Jets were losing this crucial playoff game to one of the worst, or playoff pursuing games to one of the worst teams in the NHL. It was a disaster. And if you woke up this morning not knowing the scores, you look and see all of a sudden that Winnipeg is just 2 points up on Calgary for that final wild card spot with equal games played. Perhaps more interestingly, Nashville, who also won last night, is now just 3 points back with 2 games in hand.
This is the best of Halford and Brough. Download the full show through Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You're listening to the best of the day. I say you the best. Halford and Brough.
I think generally speaking, you can say players and coaches don't tank. And I would 100% agree with that. They're playing to win. The question becomes, if it comes down to one game, the final game of the season, what happens then?
Oh, I get it. Mike from Dunbar just texted him. My son play a hockey game, and goal differential was to get in the playoffs. So in the second period, both teams pulled their goalie. Yeah, like, when you start going, like I said, there's, like, tanking. There's a reason it exists with management and not with players, because I think when you start to screw with the integrity of the game, something weird happens. And I know this is really nebulous and just talking about, like, big sort of ideas, formulating them live on the air, but, like, there's something about not playing to win and not trying to win that feels off. And that was the whole Buffalo Arizona situation. It ruined the ecosystem. Gary Bettman and Bill Daly were like, the home team is losing and the home fans are cheering because they're happy. That's not good. And I mean, I'm not necessarily saying it's not good for business or it's definitely not good for competitive integrity, but it felt weird and it feels off and wrong. But because I don't want to be that guy. Like, I know.
Well, already are.
Yeah, fair. But I know that last game, if that last game against Arizona was win and you're out of the lottery, lose and you're in the lottery, I'm not stupid. I'm not that stupid. But I know that you should lose the game and get in the lottery.
You could silver lining it, though, at the very least. If they fall out of the Bedard race, like if there's just 0% chance, and let's face it, they probably weren't going to get him anyway.
What's the silver lining? We all die in the end?
That's but it's another a silver event. Lining. if they could finish, if they have a chance at drafting in the top 3 to 5, if they could at least do that, that is still huge because of this draft year.
Yes, it is.
If you forget about Bedard and just get Bedard out of your mind, if they could get second, third, even fourth or fifth, a chance of those players, franchise-altering thing.
We all know that, Andy.
So I'm just saying, let's not forget about that, though. Because we're all tied up in the, come on, Bedard! I mean, yes, I get it. It's Bedard.
Yeah, because Bedard's the guy.
I know.
The other guys are good. Yes, but
no,
Bedard is great. Bedard is a local phenom
I know.
Who wants to play
his favorite
for
team
the
is
Canucks.
The Canucks.
Give me a 2% chance. Give me a 3% chance.
I'm just saying, if it weren't to happen, it's not the worst thing in the world because of the year that we're in, the draft year that we're in.
I think if this happens, it will be one of the most
the darkest days for the franchise.
No. It'll be hilarious.
It would be hilarious.
Like just that game.
Yes.
Now I'm hoping it happens.
If it comes down to one game, it would be like a playoff game, but in reverse. It'd be like a reverse playoff game. Like, oh my God, the stress. Would just be unimaginable.
Can you imagine the fighting on Twitter?
Oh, I'm
next kind of, level fighting.
I'm kind of excited, actually.
.803 on a Wednesday. Halford Bruff, Sportsnet 650. It's the rage in the mornings with Halford and Bruff.
I like how you waited till the breakdown before talking. Thank you. Thank you for being patient.
This is always an underrated part of the week, is the Wednesday metal with Murph, and then the dogs just quietly do the headbanging behind the glass. Andy's headbanging is adorable because he has this wry little grin on his face. He's like, I am enjoying the metal.
Well, this takes me back to my touring days. This is the kind of music we played. So,
isn't what you played?
Yeah. We were pretty heavy.
Which band had the best headbangers?
Slayer.
Yeah, they're Napalm Death, Slayer, Megadeth.
Megadeth.
I mean, there's so many bands, metal bands from the 80s that sort of just defined that era.
Mm-hmm.
It's hard to move past them. They're the best.
We're coming to you live from the Kintech studio. Kintech Footwear and Orthotics, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, supported by over 2,500 five-star Google reviews. Find your perfect fit at kintech.net. Do you think you got used to the headbanging? Like there are some guys that would be like, I'm going to do this headbanging for the entire song, maybe the entire concert. Does that give you neck problems?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
Do you get a headache? Do you have to work your way up?
You got to pick your spots. It was a carefully choreographed performance. You can't just go all out for 30 minutes or you will die.
Yeah. Right. Like you stop doing it and then you look up, you're like, ooh, now I got the dizzies.
Yeah. Oh,
yeah.
Yeah.
Like
oh, yeah.
You get vertigo and everything. Oh, yeah. It's like, what'd you do? I went to a Megadeth concert.
Yeah.
We see this a lot.
There's a guy sitting down with his eyes closed and a sleep mask on. It doesn't get more metal than that.
Could you please calm down? I'm trying to listen.
Murph's going to join us in just a moment here on the Halford and Bruff Show on Sportsnet 650. I need to tell you that hour three of this program, which features Dan Murphy from Sportsnet, is brought to you by Campbell & Pound Real Estate Appraisers. Trust the expertise of Campbell & Pound. Visit them on the good old-fashioned interweb, campbell-pound.com, today. And also, the entirety of the Halford and Bruff Show is brought to you by the Dilawri family of Acura dealers. Experience the Dilawri difference today by visiting your nearest Dilawri Acura dealer today. Do we have Murph on the line yet? Is he here?
We're
Andy's
still efforting
calling right now.
He was talking to you guys. You were distracting him.
It's fine. I was just asking a question. No,
Halford, I want you to lay out the scenario.
Got really defensive there all of a sudden. Andy's gesticulating wildly. Yeah,
I want you to lay out the scenario for Murph about the final two games of the season or even the final game of the season, and you ask Murph how he thinks that would play out.
Okay. First question? We'll just leave with that.
Say we were discussing this earlier.
Yeah, okay.
Do you think this is possible? And if it does happen, how do you think it's going to play out? You're better explaining these things. I just tend to ramble.
It's true.
I'm like, Murph, final game, Arizona. What happens then? Bottom 11.
Betting odds. Yeah, I know. I'll explain it. Don't worry. Murph's going to join us in just a second.
You're talking metal, so we got to wait here.
No, that's fair. That's understandable.
Yeah, me and Murph were having a moment. Sorry. He's ready now, though.
Was it a good moment?
It was a great moment.
You're so you got such...
I love talking about metal with Murph.
You have the best grin. You're so happy. That's the thing. We said, you know, how do you describe Andy's life? And it was like, one was cozy, two was sugar, and three is smiles.
Well, I got given a PS5 yesterday as well, so I'm still high on
you
that.
You did?
For my birthday, yes.
Oh, right.
Wait,
it's
your birthday?
When's
your birthday?
My birthday's technically tomorrow, but I got the gift yesterday.
He couldn't wait. He saw
That is definitely his way of saying, don't forget my birthday tomorrow.
No. I know. This is Andy.
I don't know if one of you guys have a 4K TV back there.
You know when
Maybe our listeners have a 4K TV
kids get closer to Christmas and they can't control the excitement, so you let them open a gift.
One gift?
The day early. You did that with your birthday.
Yes, it's true.
How old are you?
I'm 39.
He did that on his 39th birthday. Yeah. 3 days in advance of his birthday.
Yes, yes.
Okay, Murph's waiting patiently on hold here. Joining us now, a presentation of Freeway Mazda. It's Dan Murphy here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Morning, Murph. How are you?
I'm good, fellas. How are you guys?
Good. You tired? I know you flew in late from St. Louis last night.
Yeah, I think I got home about 2 a.m.-ish.
A little
tired, but not too bad. I got up with the dog and the child. The dogs and the child woke me up, and now I'm driving to go to the gym. But the birthday thing, we made fun of Shorty a lot when it was his birthday because it seemed like it turned into a birthday week. He told everybody.
Yeah, he's one of those.
Last week, it was like he was 5 years old.
We've talked. Andy has birthday month. Andy had birthday month. The entire
and
month.
How
of
old
March.
Are you now, John?
Exactly. Oh my God, it was so funny. Before we talk about the Canucks, are we going to be able to talk about Cheech?
Yeah. Do you want to start with that?
I do. I don't want it to get lost in the shuffle. Because I think that. I think people see Cheech on TV and they have an idea what he is like. And I would like to say that he is exactly what you think he's like from TV. He is the exact same person you watch. He is the funniest guy, the most genuine guy. He is the guy that loves to make fun of himself before anyone else, but he'll make fun of other people too. And I've said this before, like we talk about, like I've seen him in a bad mood once. It was literally a 5-minute snit he had one time because we went to a restaurant and we got our beers and they wouldn't serve us food. Literally in 20 years, that's the only time I've seen him kind of less than happy. And that was in Columbus. In 20 years. No joke. I've probably spent, I was trying to ballpark it because I think I'm on the road 100 to 120 days a year. So... you know, some of that is playoffs when I'm not with Cheech and Shorty. So I'm going to say 100 days a year I'm with him on the road. So let's say that's 20 years, 2,000 days. That's rather incredible that the guy doesn't get grumpy over that time. And he is the first to pick up a check. He is humble, funny, genuine. Anyway, it's just like I couldn't imagine having a better road partner, because Shorty and I, you know, we like Shorty can be a little princess sometimes, and he can be upset and cranky and moody, and I'm sure I have my moments, but I guess if you're going to say the culture carrier of our line was Cheech, and the absolute best. Whatever you think you know of him, it's that, you know, plus 100.
How many times do you think the three of you have been together and just like been uncontrollably laughing?
Oh my God. It happens at least once a road trip. At least once where someone says something or we're reminded of something or we make fun of one of us. Like when we're on the air, it happens. I mess up two times, three times a show. And the problem is that as soon as I make a mistake, my mic is cut And those two guys make fun of me. I have no rebuttal because I can't say anything because the audio guys already cut my mic. So those guys, they think they're superior with, you know, what Shorty with, or Cheech with his Queen's, you know, English degree, and Shorty with his mom, who's I think was an English teacher. They think that I'm beneath them, if, you know, which I probably am with my education. So yeah, we have laughed at least once a road trip to the point where we're almost crying, and most of the time it's because of Cheech.
So I do want to ask you about this because I know the dynamic between the three of you, and I know that it's such a unique work environment because.
So, hey, I'm among the three of us. See, and I would only know that because of those two idiots.
Right.
Between
there you go.
Two, among three, right?
See, me and you, Murph.
They browbeat me this stuff, by the way. So go on.
No, okay. I'm glad that you're bringing this dynamic up because it's important to understand. Yeah. Like, so when Cheech announced he was not going to do regional Canucks broadcasts anymore, you tweeted out,
yeah,
I'm not ready to talk about it yet. And then I noticed throughout the following days, there were a lot of tweets. It felt like it was a very emotional time. Is that fair to classify it as such? Like it was emotional. And I think part of it has to do with,
for sure.
Yeah. And now you're ready to talk about it. And we made it front and center. This is more than just parting ways with a coworker or a buddy. It feels like that to me anyway.
Well, for sure. I mean, I have spent as much time. I've had as many dinners with John Garrett in the last 20 years, probably more than I've had with my family. That's just the way it is. Like, you spend so much time together on the road that you don't even really think about it. It's just like I couldn't imagine having this job and not liking your coworkers in this sense, the people you travel with every day. And I'll say Shorty, of course, in there. And even Greg Shannon, our producer, who's not on every road trip. But if you didn't enjoy, being on the road, the job would be insufferable. You'd be in your hotel room the whole time. You'd be by yourself. And, so when you think about it that way, like if this announcement would have came 10 years ago, I would seriously be thinking about my job. Like, I don't know who's coming in next. And I'm sure, so I get along with most people. And I'm sure it's going to be great, but it's just never going to be the same as that guy. Like
That's what you should say to the new person, by the way.
Yeah.
It's never going to be the same as the last guy, just so you know.
Exactly. And of course, like it could be great as well, but for 20 years, this guy has just made everything fun. He's fun.
Yeah.
That's it. And I guess it's just the greatest way to put it. Like he's the Brad Hunt of broadcasters. There's never a bad day, right? He's always smiling. He's always cracking a joke. He's always making fun of me or Shorty or himself. It's just always been, you cannot get downstairs in the lobby of the hotel and see him and not smile.
Right. We're speaking to Dan Murphy here on the Halford and Brough Show on Sportsnet 650. Murph is a presentation of Freeway Mazda, Canada's number one consumer-rated Mazda dealer. Okay, Murph, the other thing that we wanted to do aside from talk about Cheech, which I'm glad we got to do front and center, was Brough has a sort of thought exercise here, okay?
Okay.
So yep. The last game of the regular season, which coincidentally I believe will also be Cheech's last call on the Regional Canucks broadcast, let's say there's this scenario at play where if the Canucks beat Arizona, they move themselves out of the lottery. They don't have any chance to get any lottery odds whatsoever, even the 3% that you might to win the Connor Bedard sweepstakes.
For Connor Bedard, they're still going to be in the draft lottery, but their chances at Bedard, so they would move out of the bottom 11.
So win, and they're out. Lose, and they're in. Even if it's only a 2 or 3% chance, as the saying goes, you can't win it if you're not in it. What do you do?
What do I do or what do they do?
How about both?
Well, I mean, I'm if I'm up a goal, I'm pulling my goaltender. Like, I want to be in it, right? I mean, but what's the rule? Where, like, what's an automatic goal? Like, I don't even know. There's
you throw
a
your stick
time.
At a guy on a breakaway.
Yeah, like I'm doing
sticks catapulting all over the place.
It. I'm doing everything to be in it. I am like stapling Quinn Hughes's pants to the bench. I am, you know, I want to be in it, but I'm not a player. Like, I can't tell you, like, the mood around the team right now is unlike anything I've seen since maybe they won, like, you know, the first 8 games under Boudreaux last year.
Okay.
Like, it's, I haven't heard music on the plane forever. Like, forever. Like, there, back in the days of Willie Mitchell and the Twins, and Willie used to run the music, there was music on the plane all the time. Get on, you could hear it in the back. I hadn't heard that for a long time. I think I heard it a couple games after the Dallas game. I was like, I have not heard music, and the music was on. Like, these guys are back to having fun. Like, it was difficult this year.
Yeah.
That was a lot of losing. I mean, it's been difficult for a decade, but I mean, it's just, it, for the players, they don't think about the draft lottery. They don't think about, you know, what guy is going to come in and help them. They think about trying to win a game and beating the guys next, like, across from them. And they're doing that, and they're having fun. Like, was there any question in your mind last night that they were not going to tie it? You knew they were.
Yeah. When
2.5 minutes left, yeah, to pull the goalie.
When Petey, like, and Kuzmenko hooked up on that goal, it was like, yeah, they're, yeah, tying it for sure.
No question. And I was surprised they didn't win it. So, yes, like, I am fully on board with steering into a tank, like, as just, you know, just like thinking it, and like common sense, and wanting the best draft pick, and wanting a chance at Bedard. Like, that is, I am in that camp, but they're not, right? They're like, I'll say it this way. They need to, like, could you imagine if they would have made the coaching change and continued to crater and not won games? Like, how would they have felt going into the offseason?
Yeah.
Like, would they have been excited to come back next year? Like, I know what happened last season, too. I don't know if it's sustainable. I don't know if they'll have a good start next season. But it's still the better option than if they would have kept losing. You know, would Pettersson have been happy to talk about contract extensions? You know, like, just all, if you would have gone to in the offseason fully negative, and the players are negative, it would have been like, I can't get into their heads, but I can't imagine they would have looked forward to coming back next season. You know, maybe they lose 7 straight again to start next season. I have no idea. But I know that they'll be more looking forward to come back in for training camp than they would have if they would have kept losing. They're just in a better headspace. Maybe it's not sustainable, but I think as far as just from the player's point of view, this is a better situation.
Murph, thanks for joining us today. Thanks for those great words about Cheech. We can see the fun you guys have together, and I think it shines through on the broadcast, and we can see that you guys are friends and not just acting as friends on the broadcast, and I think that's what's made it so enjoyable for Canucks fans to watch the three of you, especially Cheech, not so much Shorty and you, but especially, yeah, Cheech, but the course, three of you, you guys, I've seen you guys in action. I know the friendship is genuine, and everyone else knows it's genuine because it's easy to see. So, you know, we're going to miss Cheech on the broadcast. So hopefully the new guy brings something. He's going to have to.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. And it's totally, totally true. So, no pressure to the next guy, by the way.
Thanks, Murph. Appreciate it, bud.
Thanks, Murph.
All right, guys. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks. That's Dan Murphy. Presentation of Freeway Mazda, Canada's number one consumer-rated Mazda dealer. Okay.
Can I just do a quick PSA, sorry, because we're, yeah, getting a bunch of texts about this.
What's up?
Apple Podcasts has been really slow the last 2 or 3 weeks. Like, mm-hmm, literally it can take up to an hour for the podcast to appear after I publish it. Nothing on our end, nothing we can do about it. It's all on Apple. So I'm just suggesting to the listener, if you have a Spotify account, use that, because it's like within 5 minutes usually, okay, of me publishing it. Or if you don't have that and don't want to pay for that, just use Google Podcasts, because that's free for everybody, and listen that way. Because, yeah, I don't know what's going on with Apple, but they're just really slow right now.
Good PSA, Andy. Thanks for letting us know.
No problem.
Jason always gets very antsy when he sees texts come in to the Dunbar Lumber text message.
Andy, the podcast.
Whenever someone says, there's no podcast, Jason, right away, there's no podcast.
And then I just want people to get their content.
That's what Andy was telling him. There's alternate methods.
I'm just thinking of the people that listen to us every day, and I feel they're important.
Yeah.
No, Halford doesn't feel the listener is important.
I tell them to shut up, or I block.
Halford's a realist.
Stop complaining. Block
commander.
Okay. We're gonna do what we learns here.
I'm gonna do a quick one.
Okay, but I'll as another PSA, I'll remind everyone that we are giving away tickets to the Canucks and Flames on Friday night. The contest has not been decided yet. You can still win. There's still time. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Hashtag it WWL and add a ticket emoji to be entered into the grand prize draw for a pair of tickets. That's two tickets to the Canucks and Flames on Friday night, March 31st, Rogers Arena. Go.
I learned that a Canadian could soon own the NFL's Washington Commanders. Canadian billionaire... This is going to be a tough one here. Steve Apostolopoulos.
There you go.
Is he Greek, do you think?
No.
No?
Finnish.
German.
Finnish?
German.
Steve Apostolopoulos has submitted a fully funded $6 billion offer for the Commanders.
Wow.
ESPN is reporting this. Now, he's not the only group to have submitted a fully funded $6 billion offer for the Commanders, because there's a group, Josh Harris and Mitchell Rails, and that group includes Magic Johnson, have also submitted the same offer. Dan Snyder, the owner in Washington, he wanted $6 billion for the Commanders, and it looks like he's going to get it. Do you remember not long ago when Forbes would come out with their list of franchise valuations, and it would be like, the Dallas Cowboys might be worth, get this, $1 billion.
$1 billion used to be cool. I don't know what's cool now. $1 trillion?
The franchise values in professional sports, major league sports, and I would include like teams like Manchester United or Real Madrid, the New York Yankees, the Dallas Cowboys. Like, not all of them have sold in the last little while, so we don't officially know what they're worth. Yeah. But it is crazy money. Of course, the Denver Broncos recently sold for $4.65 billion. If the Washington Commanders, whose brand has been beaten down pretty badly in that market, are worth $6 billion,
yeah.
What are the Dallas Cowboys worth?
$10? $10
billion. Right?
A trillion? I think, literally, we're going to get to the point where,
Like, there's no way the Vancouver Canucks, for example, are worth anything less than, what, $1.5 billion? If the Ottawa Senators, mm-hmm. who still have to figure out an arena situation, are worth almost $1 billion,
yep.
And that sale process should be wrapped up in the next little while, although there's no rush, they want to get it right. It's just insane.
The Canucks are a $1.5 billion franchise,
yeah.
I would say. And it's crazy that we are here, because in my sad little world, I rewatched the 30 for 30, the John Spano one.
Oh, yeah.
Big shot. Where he tried to buy the – you know what he tried to buy the Islanders for? He didn't have the money.
Was it like $100 million
or something? $140 million.
Yeah.
Pettersson's going to get that on his next extension.
So you're saying Pettersson could buy the Islanders?
If he wanted to, back in the mid-90s, he could have them. That could be the trade. He's like, don't give me an extension. Give me the Islanders. Mm-hmm. It's insanity how much money and how the valuations have skyrocketed. Like, some people will say Bettman hasn't done a good enough job of raising prices comparative to some of the other franchises. And then when you look at there's always that joke about the NHL salaries compared to
them. Yeah.
I think it's all apples and oranges. When you look at where the NHL came from, where guys like John Spano, I remember Boots Del Biagio, for Nashville, those guys used to get, pardon the pun, their foot in the door.
Mm-hmm.
Boots got his foot in the door.
Yeah.
Because
it was a different league then.
Because you could buy for $140 million. I know these numbers sound gargantuan, but I mean, the reality of it is owning professional sports franchises, you used to get like a crazy old oil baron or something like that, a guy who had good money,
yeah,
comparatively speaking to the. But now it's like you need to be in this echelon of multi-billionaires.
And it's always so much bigger now than just owning the team. Like, it's I'm going to own the team. And then I'm going to develop billions of dollars worth of, you know, retail space and residential around the arena. It's always way bigger than the team.
Before we move, out, the so Apostolopoulos?
Yeah.
I remembered his name, but I didn't remember from where. And then I remember, you know what his dad did? He was the guy that bought the Pontiac Silverdome for like $600K.
Remember that? Was him?
That was his dad. Yeah. I was like, I know this name from somewhere. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, that was one of the greatest real estate purchases of all time.
I think you say he opened a pizza joint.
No.
There's no way he paid that much for it.
$583,000.
$583,000. Oh, I thought you said million.
I said $600K.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I just rounded up. But I forgot.
And then, did you know what? He lived there.
I would. It's got stuff. It's got a bunch of bathrooms. How many bathrooms does it have? 97.
The Jumbotron is his TV?
Yeah. Like,
oh, my God. Can you imagine?
God, because I was trying to think. Like, I think there was a big WrestleMania there.
Yeah, WrestleMania 3.
At the Pontiac Silverdome.
Yeah, they set the indoor attendance record.
Could you imagine like being in this, like just living there? You know, you could go around. You could eat. Wouldn't it be great living in a
wasn't
arena?
That where, wasn't
dare
that,
to dream?
Wasn't that the famous Macho Man, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat?
WrestleMania 3?
WrestleMania 3, I think it was. I think that was the famous match.
And then that was Ricky the Dragon Steamboat against Macho Man, and then that was finished with Hulk slamming Andre the Giant. That was all the same WrestleMania,
I believe so. Yeah. Anyway,
I need to know this. Mookow,
give us a Mookow. We probably got like three different things wrong.
This is the best of Halford and Bruff. Download the full show through Apple, Google, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.